Welcome to Fiber Talk. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And our guest this week is the Twisted Stitcher, Vonna Pfeiffer. Hi, Vonna.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Christine.
Okay, first question out of the gate. Where did the Twisted Stitcher come from?
Yeah, that is the best name ever.
I was born in 1970. So during the 80s, the band, the Twisted Sister, was very popular, and my brother had all of their albums, and I really didn't like their music, but when I was trying to come up with a catchy name for my blog, I was thinking Stitcher, and I thought, hey, Twisted Stitcher, that Twisted Stitcher. So that's how I came up with it.
And so this is funny because everything ties together. Dee Snider, who is the lead singer of Twisted Sister, lives in the same town as I do. Because they are a local band to me, and I think their drummer went to the same high school I did. So there you go.
There you go.
All tied together. But yes, awesome name.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
And you can always blame it on your brother. So that's good.
That's right.
Okay, so I was watching some of your videos. Just because I want to learn how to finish. And so, I mean, not just in preparation for this, but in general, been watching your videos. And in the background, you have, it looks like a Sterlite or Tupperware type, a tall box with threads hanging in it. And I had not seen that kind of thread storage. So I got to know, how are you doing that? How are you hanging the threads in that box?
Okay.
Before we even start though, can we talk a little bit about what your specialty is and why?
Oh, okay. Background.
Probably do that, right? Yeah. So Gary's assuming that everyone has his basis of knowledge. So I will represent everyone else and say, so tell me about what you do.
I'm a cross stitcher and I have stitched since I was 15 years old. I'm 46 currently. So that means I've been stitching for 31 years. I learned to cross stitch on my own, essentially. My stepmother, when I was visiting my father for summer vacation, they both worked, and I was bored during the day, and I believe that she knew that I was bored. And so she gave me two small little cross stitch kits. I believe they were probably dimension kits of two little teddy bears. And one of them said, good night. And the other one said, sleep tight. And she gave them to me. And she told me, here, do this. And I read the instructions. And I voraciously finished the first one the very first day. They were about ornament size. And I finished the second one. The next day, she took me to, I think, probably somewhere like Target or Kmart, and I got a larger kit, and the rest is history. I have been cross-stitching ever since 1985, so that's what my background is. That's what my, I guess that's what everybody probably knows me for, is my cross-stitching and my finishing, and that my cross-stitching just evolved into my finishing. About the time that bulletin boards were very popular on the internet, I became very active on a exchange bulletin board, and I started a blog, and Diane Williams of Little House Needleworks, who is a designer in the cross-stitch industry, contacted me about model finishing for her, and that was about 2008. And ever since then, I have been a finisher for people in the cross-stitch industry, designers. And I opened in the fall of 2008 the Twisted Stitchers finishing service. And I have been finishing for the public since that time.
So for people who are not needlework people, can you explain what goes into finishing?
It's essentially the people that cross-stitch, or, you know, as myself included, after the piece is finished, if you do not want to frame that piece, which can be very expensive for smaller, this wouldn't be like a very large type project, but for smaller ornaments, Stockings is a good example of things that people need finished, ornaments, pillows, that sort of thing. I take the raw product that they have stitched and then finish it and transform it into a fully finished object.
Okay, so that makes sense because I recently, having sat with a quilt top that I have quilted and then, or I have not quilted, that I pieced and then did not quilt for over a decade, embarrassingly, have just discovered that there are services that, that do exactly that, where you can ship out your quilt top and somebody with a long arm machine will quilt it for you. And at first my feeling was that seems really like cheating, but now that you say that this is an actual thing, now I don't feel like that would be cheating, and I'm giving myself permission to send my quilt out to actually have it finished. So thank you for explaining, and thank you for giving me permission to do what I thought was cheating.
It's not cheating.
Yeah, good. See, now I feel so much better. Okay, Gary, now you can ask about your threads.
You got all your background things out of the way so I can get to the questions?
Yes. Sorry. Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
So, you know, but you mentioned dimensions. I wonder how many tens of thousands dimensions kits have been sold and started people. I know I started with more than one.
I did too. So did I.
I mean, it's widely available. They're simple. You know, they have everything from start to finish, how to do it in there. And I think that that's probably how many of us got started, especially in the 70s and the 80s, before you had like cross-stitch designers on, you know, an individual basis where they had their own companies formed and distributors and all of that. So I think that you're right. I think dimensions is probably the gold standard for starting people to out in the cross-stitch field in their hobby. So.
Yeah, we used to have a place called Lee Ward's. I don't know how.
Yes.
Oh, you know that one. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's because that's where I would go and pour through the dimensions kits and come home with a couple of them. And I remember opening them up and you get to sort out all the yarn and, you know, because that was wool, needlepoint wool.
Mm.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
And sort it all out and get it all ready to go. I remember that was almost as much fun as doing the stitching.
Yeah. Well, and those are the kits that appear in, like, generalized craft stores. So those are the things that you would find if you weren't already doing this sort of work, whereas if you go into a specialized needlework shop, that's when you'll find, I think, the sort of the higher end kits that are a little bit more expensive point of entry, but also more complicated and perhaps a little bit more sophisticated.
Yeah, do they even make dimension kits anymore? I don't buy kits. I don't buy kits just in rules in general. They still do.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, that's a long time then.
That is.
I mean, you know, that's a lot of years they've been doing those. Yep.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to go look. Maybe I'll just go look. I don't even know where I'd look for around here anymore. I just have never, but you know, they always had, it was always quality stuff. And like you said, yeah, the directions, everything was good to go. Yep.
Right. From start to finish. They have them at Joann's.
Yes. Michael's.
Michael's.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
We have AC Moore here. I mean, I don't know how many of these stores are national, but AC Moore here has them also. So any of the larger craft stores, even places like that are more art, leaning, like Pearl Paint, which is a big New York City, company and online, they'll have them as well. So yeah, they're pretty ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, might be worth checking out just for fun, just to see how much they've changed. I don't think I'll buy one though. I got away from kits. I liked knowing that when I started, I would have more thread than I needed because I always felt constrained. I just felt like I had to be so careful with a kit so I wouldn't run out of thread.
Right.
And that always made me nervous. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I got to get this question answered because ever since I saw it. So tell me how you're hanging those threads in that big plastic bin.
Well, I have a tutorial on my blog.
Of course you do. So that was a gentle way of saying if you pay attention, you'd know. Okay, got it.
And it explains it all out in there for anybody that's wanting to listen, Gary. You can go and look it up on my blog.
But, okay. No, that's okay. I got it. I got the message. I'll look.
Essentially what it is they're plastic file boxes from like office. I got them at Office Depot. And I took hanging file folders and I measured off about a 2-inch space from the metal hanger part at the top, and I cut them, and then I punched holes in them, and about, you know, like 18, 20 holes down the length of the top of the file folder, so the folder part was gone, and I just had these hangers with holes in the 2-inch below all along the length, and I use ring clips. And I put them by company. So I have one for Weeks Dye Works, Classic Color Works, and Gentle Arts. And I put them in there alphabetically or by ABC order so that if a pattern calls for Gentle Arts Cherry Cobbler, I can go to the C's and quickly find Cherry Cobbler in my Gentle Arts file box. So that's what they are. They're all my over-dyed company specialty threads in boxes by the companies in ABC order.
And just using standard hanging file folder, basically the metal rod and 2 inches worth of the folder itself.
That's right.
That's very slick. Very slick.
It is.
Thank you. I came up with that on my own, as a matter of fact.
It is such a smart idea.
I just used to have my threads lying in a drawer, and they would get tangled, and I never knew what I had, and I would get frustrated. And so about 2 years ago, I decided I've got to come up with something that makes this, you know, better. And I talked to my husband about getting a pegboard and hanging it on the wall, and you know how they do that at like needlework shops.
Right.
And then I thought, well, you know, that where I work at or where I have all my stash is down in our unfinished basement, and our cats live down here in the nighttime. We put them down here in the bachelor pad. And I thought, you know, that it's pretty bright down here because it's in the basement, but it's only in the earth, three sides. So the back is open to the, you know, the world. And it gets pretty light by those windows, and I didn't want my threads to, you know, fade or anything. So I came up with this idea when I saw the boxes on clearance at Office Depot on a January, and they were for $2. And I thought, I can make this work somehow. And I started just walking the aisles, and I saw those file folders, and I thought, I can do cut those off and punch holes, and it all came together. It works really good. It's probably the only thing that I would do different if I was going to do it over is I would get a file cabinet and do it that way. But other than that, it is a pretty slick deal. I really like it.
Yeah, well, see, for me, it addresses the two things that bother me about storing thread. And, I mean, the stores don't have a choice. They have to have it out. But it's the potential for it to fade over long-term storage.
Right.
And then for dust to get on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that keeps it all, and it keeps it clean. And, you know, like I said, you can just see it right through there. I have, I bought those round circle tags and vinyl letters, and I put the ABCs on those so I can just go look on the side in through the clear box and see the letter. Like if I needed a poblano pepper from Classic Color Works, I would go to the P's and then just scan that. I will say I started out with them alphabetized, and I soon quickly forgot about alphabetizing them. So they're just in the P's are all together and the A's are all together and so on. So, but it does work very well.
Yeah, that's neat. Cause see, I have to tell the story of my thread storage. We have friends who bought a house here a couple years ago, and it's a fairly large house. And the previous owner was a gun collector, and he had an official gun room, you know, proper humidity, you know, wood racks, the whole bit. And of course, the people that our friends who bought it, they had no interest in guns, so they had he has this really nice little room that would make a great stitching room, but he's not into stitching, so it's not going to happen. But but so we were over there and we're getting a tour of the house. They'd only been in a few months, and he's and then I got this gun room. I don't know what I'm going to do with this gun room, but I have it. And then he says, and I've got these tool chest drawer, tool chest boxes, and they were they're heavy duty metal. I mean, they're very expensive, and the rollers are so smooth and everything. He says, do you guys want these? And it was six of us together, and us three guys were touring the gun, the gun room, and do you want these? And the other friend said, no, I got no interest. And I said, really, you want to give those away? Because they're not cheap boxes. Yeah, he said, I don't want them. Get them out of here. And I said, well, yeah, I'll take them. He said, what are you going to use them for? I said, you're going to laugh at me. But I said, I'm storing thread in these things.
So, a little different.
Yeah, so I lined them with acid-free paper and stored the threads. But I've quickly come to the point where you were at, Vonna, where I've got all these threads in drawers. And every time I'm looking for threads, I have to basically pull out all the pearl number fives or pearl number eights and line them up on the table and find what I want. And it's not a good system. Yours is much better. Yeah.
Well, thank you. It works really well.
Yeah. And cheap. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So cross stitch, do you do mostly from what I've seen at first, your blog, I've been following your blog forever. And I just really enjoy, watching your family, watching your kids grow, and your stitching efforts, and I love your 25 days of Christmas that you do.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Christine, there's something every day.
Yes,
leading
I've
up
looked.
To Christmas. Oh, you look. So, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. I just think that's great. I always look forward to that at Christmas as we count down the days and what you have to offer each time, because it's really well done. So I enjoy that. But you do mostly smaller cross stitch pieces, is that right? Or you just don't share the big ones very often?
I do a mix. I don't do, like large. I don't do heaven and earth designs. I tried to start one of those. Jane Wooster Scott has a lot. They have a lot of hers in heaven and earth, and I tried to do a Jane Wooster Scott painting and got about probably 1,000 stitches in and thought, I'm going to die before this is ever.
Well, those things are so scary.
it was not for me. That was not for me. So I don't do that size of projects. I've done lots of, I would say medium size. I've got, there's only so many walls in your house that you can hang stuff on. That's why I really got into finishing. But I have, like I said, I'm a model stitcher for Little House. So I have a lot of her things that instead of, paying me money, after she takes the photos for her patterns and stuff, she gives them back to me. So one of the largest projects that I have ever stitched personally was her quilting bee. I can't think of what the name of it is, but it's the quilting bee piece, and that's about 30 by 30. And it's a big square project, and, there's a lot of negative space in there. But that's a large project. I also did Little House's family sampler, and that's a very stitch-dense, large, it's probably, I'd say 2.5 by 3. And, it's very, that's one of my favorite pieces. It hangs in my living room. I've done some reproduction schoolgirl samplers, a couple of those by With Thy Needle and Thread, Brenda Jervis. I have done, some of the Good Huswife. She was really hot in the 80s. She's since retired and got married and moved to Europe. And so her patterns are like really hard to find, but I was lucky. I've been cross stitching for so long, I have quite a collection of hers, and I've done a couple of her reproductions. So I don't do large projects all the time. I try to have some on the go. I'm going to currently start a Mirabilia, the Lady of the Flag, if you know any of hers. I got that pattern gifted to me recently, and I picked out the fabric, and I've got all the fiber and the beads together, and I'm really excited about doing that.
Those are, for bigger, more involved things, those are really impressive. I've seen a couple of those done. They're very beautiful.
Yes, and I didn't realize, you know, when you look at the pattern, picture on the pattern of Mirabilia's, you know, it never really struck me. And not until FlossTube, when there's a lot of people on FlossTube that do Mirabilia's, and when I started watching FlossTube about a year and a half ago, I was like, look at that. I couldn't believe how beautiful they are, because the pictures certainly do not show that on the patterns themselves. Okay. So I've kind of fallen in kind of head over heels for Mirabilia here recently. I haven't really done any yet, but I've kind of fallen head over heels for them. So I'm anxious to kind of start that. That will be a huge project. And, but you're right, Gary, a large portion of my stitching life is smalls, particularly ornaments. That is, I every Christmas when we, I have two trees that we put up. One is a Prairie Schooler Santa tree, and it only has Prairie Schooler Santas on it that I've stitched all myself. And there's a few from my friends that knew I was working towards a Santa tree. And but our family Christmas tree holds only handmade ornaments, and they probably have about 500 ornaments on our main family tree, and 275 of those were hand stitched by me. So I really love Christmas, and I really love making ornaments, and every year that's like the gift that keeps on giving, because every year when I hang up my tree, every ornament on that tree, I can remember when I stitched it, what went on that year, and it's just like opening a scrapbook of memories every time I put up my Christmas tree. So that's why I do it. I'm addicted to ornament stitching, and that is true. I try to stitch an ornament a month, and most years I make about 12 to 20 ornaments every year. So wow. I love it.
And such a good idea, though, you know, being able to tag a moment in time with a physical object like that, and then for every year to be able to relive that. That's such a great idea.
It is, and I do one for my my children every year, and my idea on that is, you know, my eldest is 19, and my idea on that is when they leave or when they get married, at their bridal shower, whether it be my daughter's or my son's, every ornament that I've stitched for them, I will have in a box and give to them at their bridal showers. So, that's my plan, so that when they're adults and they leave our home, those ornaments that hung on our tree from the time they were born until the time they live will then be on their tree. So, that's what my plan is. I hope that it all works out like I have in my head, and I think it will, because, like I said, I've got them all. Every year I stitch one for each one of them. And like this year, the ones I did for my boys, they got their driver's license this year. So I did a little, like a 1960s car for my eldest twin. And then the younger twin, he got a truck. And it was a 3D, like a bottle brush, tiny tree that I connected on the roof of the car and then put in the bed of the truck, and it turned out so cute this year for them. So I try to do things that represent the year that, you know, something that happened to them that year. So it really is like a box full of memories every year. So
that's just great. Your kids have any interest in stitching, or is that just the crazy thing mom does?
Well, they think I'm crazy, that's for certain. my oldest, Katie, she stitched when she was about 11 years old. I got her started out with a very simple project. I think it was probably a dimensions kit, a small kid's dimensions kit. And she finished it, and we put it in a frame and got all, I thought, oh, yes, I've got a stitching partner. And I said, oh, let's go pick out your next one. And we were in the store, and she got as far as the store, and we were looking at things to stitch. And she looked at me and said, Mom, and I go, yeah. And she goes, I don't like to stitch. And I said, okay, I'm sorry, honey, if you don't have to stitch, if you don't want to stitch. So she's already told me no. Don't get me involved with that. And my littlest girl, Ellie, she's now 11. And when she was 10 years old, she's in 4-H. And she decided that she wanted to do a cross stitch for needle arts for her fair 2 years ago. So she stitched a very simple design, and we framed it. And the next year, when we got ready to sign up for our 4-H, you know, projects for the next year, I said, oh, well, we'll have to put cross stitch down because you did really good on cross stitch last year. She got a blue ribbon, and her stitching was beautiful, and she took right to it. And she looked at me and said, Mom, I don't like to stitch. So I struck out twice there. So, no, I'm the only one that stitches, and that's perfectly fine. I figure maybe later in life they might be more interested in it, maybe. I don't know. My Ellie's a she's very good at art. She's a very very talented in drawing. So that's kind of her deal. And I'm hoping that Katie might turn the corner once she gets out of college. We'll see.
I think the trick is you have to pretend that you don't care. You have to treat them like cats, right?
Yeah.
Pretend that you don't care and tell them that you don't want them to do it.
Yeah.
And then, right, if you go, oh, no, I really don't want you to do this. This is not for you. Then that's the best way I've found.
Maybe I need to try that. I haven't right? tried that.
No, just don't come in my yarn. Don't look at my yarn. That's not for you. You can't have it.
Well, try it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my kids just think I'm nuts, but whatever. Yeah. So, and the other thing I wanted to ask you, when you stitch all of these charts, is it your tendency to just stick with the colors that are spec'd, or are you one who's frequently changing colors and doing variations?
You know, I do both. When over-dyed threads came out, 10, 15 years ago, I was very suspicious of those. I thought, that's not any good. Those things are too expensive. Who would want to use something like that? And it only took one project for me to see. And I realized that, these are kind of nice. So it depends on what kind of look I'm going for. But I hear lately I have done a lot of conversions from DMC to like a special, like a Gentle Arts or a Classic Color Works or a Weeks Dye Works to get that mottled effect, particularly if the color is mottled. I tend to go for that. If it's a straight color like a DMC, I don't find there's any use to change it. But I do like that mottled kind of old-fashioned muted look that over-dyed cottons give. And I think it depends on the project, but if it's a large piece, a lot of times I will switch it if it's not called for. But, it seems like the designers, particularly the ones I stitch, a lot of them are just right away are using the over-dyes. So I'm not above changing, and I have been known to change, but I don't do it every time. So.
Yeah, those over-dyes certainly open a lot of doors. They really.
They certainly do.
Yeah. Silk or cotton? Don't care.
I don't know. I might get in trouble here, but I don't really like silk at all, to be honest with you.
Oh, I can't believe it.
I don't know.
That's blasphemous.
You just said the happiest, right? Because weren't we just talking about how you don't like rayon? And yeah. Because it's slippery, so.
That's kind of the way I know that, they say it slips right through the fabric, and I've heard people say that, and I just can tell you that I think I like cottons. I don't know what it is about it. Yes, they're soft, and yes, they're beautiful. But to me, cotton's where it's at. So that's I just stick with cottons. I'm not a silk person at all.
Yeah, just curious, just curious. I mean, I'll do either one, as long as it's not rayon. So. but well, Debbie, you know, Debbie Rowley in our last podcast gave tips on how to deal with rayon, so I'm gonna try again.
I have to say, so now I'm you know, intrigued by this because I haven't done any kind of embroidery or cross stitch in decades. But when you're talking about how the silk goes through the fabric, I have such a vivid sort of sensory memory of exactly what the cotton thread feels like going through both, you know, embroidery, going through like needlepoint canvas and also going through cross stitch fabric. It's such it's very specific feel. Mm-hmm. So I can totally, it's like such a vivid memory of being such a tiny person and just exactly what that feels like. So I can appreciate why you would want to stick with with that, because it almost becomes, when you're stitching, it's that comfort of that's what you're doing, and that feel becomes so associated with that comfortable, everything is well in the house kind of feeling. So to switch to something else that's not only feels different but is, you know, sort of an ornery thread to work with, I could understand and appreciate the resistance. But on the other hand, I can also appreciate the fact that you do get such different types of effects doing it that way.
Mm-hmm. It's almost meditative to me.
Correct. Exactly.
There's a sound to it. There's a feel to it. I always tell people, you know, that stitching to me is my cow gone moment.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
you know, cause when I was growing up, they go, oh, go to Calgon, have a Calgon moment. And, you know, I had 3 children under the age of 2 at one time, and I never quit stitching because that was my sanity. That was my Calgon moment. And I, you know, my husband, if I'm grumpy, he'll say, have you stitched today? You know? there is very rarely a day that goes by that I do not stitch at least, you know, an hour. I love it that much. It's just that much a part of my life. And I know that many, many people feel that way. And, you know, when we got married, I dabbled in a lot of things. And I tell this to people, and they're, you know, it almost like offends people when I say this. But my husband, when we got married, we were moving into our new home. And he was carrying in box after box after box. And he'd go, what is this? And I go, oh, that's scrapbooking. What is this? Oh, that's crochet. What is this? Oh, that's cross stitch. What is this? Quilting, you know, and all this stuff. And he finally said, this is ridiculous. You have to pick, you have to pick one craft. And, so I thought about it. You know, we were just married. I didn't want to get divorced.
Vonna, you do realize that's a complete reversal of what's normal. Because normally it's the husband dragging all kinds of garbage into the house, furniture that's beat up, you know, and this has got to go,
I don't know, Gary. You haven't seen my basement.
Oh, okay.
So I had to think long and hard. It didn't take me very long because I was in love with stitching even then. And, I pick stitching and I never look back, and that's really, that is truly the only thing I do. And I'm glad I wouldn't have known in 1995 that I would have been so deeply involved as stitching as what I am today. And with my yes to stitching then, I've come all this way, and I feel, and I mean, it's good. I'm glad. I love this hobby. And, I'm glad that he kind of put me to the fire there and made me choose, I guess.
I just have this mental image of your husband herding up the kids and saying, come on, kids, we got to go outside. Mama's got to stitch or we won't be able to live with her the rest of the day.
He would do that. As a matter of fact, he would come home from work when they were little, particularly the first 3, when they were little, he would come home from work and we would have supper. And he would get them in a wagon, and he would say, you stay and stitch. And that's what I would do. I would stitch, and he would take them for a wagon ride for an hour. So that was a large part of our family family time in the evening. Is Mommy would have a little time, and he would have some time with the kids. And that was good for them, and it was good for me, too. So it worked out.
That's great. That's great. So we just redid our family room here in the past year. And I carved out a corner and was able to get, I went to IKEA and found, my wife found it, a big table with a shelf end. And then I have those two gun cabinet things. And so for the first time, I have a chair with my gun cabinets full of thread. That's funny. And a big table and a floor stand. And a comfortable office chair, and I can sit there and watch TV and stitch. And it's just been a game changer because, you know, I have space to work, a big table, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And when I look at your videos, as much mm-hmm. as I like mine, you sure look to have a really nice big space to do all of your work. A big table, you got sewing mm-hmm. machine on its own table, and it looks like you really have a nice setup.
This is what you're speaking about is where I do my finishing mostly. And you're right. I do have a lot. It's lovely. It's a wonderful space. It's a little cold in the wintertime because, it's in an unfinished basement and we live in Indiana. So it's a little cool, but, my husband bought me a space heater last Christmas. So that makes it a little bit warmer in the winter. And it's a little hot in the summer because it truly is unfinished. We don't have air vents that come down here. Everything in here is repurposed. We didn't buy anything new except for the long white table. We bought that at Sam's. And I have used, you know, I guess, what do you say? Repurpose, recycle, reuse. I have done that here in the basement. And it has really worked out wonderfully. I do have a big space and I can store all my fabrics for finishing and my ribbons. And then my stash is down here with me too. So, I did a video on that on FlossTube and I called it like my own needle workshop, and it is like my own needle workshop. And I'm down here every day because I'm finishing full time now. And, I'm down here every day with the things that I love best. And I was just thinking, last week, boy, I've got the best of both worlds. I don't have to go outside and drive somewhere to go to work. I just, you know, put on my jogging pants and come downstairs essentially within my house shoes. So, I'm doing what I love, and, I'm making a little bit of money to help my husband support our family. So, it's really, cross stitch has really become, you know, a very integral part of my life. And, I'm happy and I like it and I love it and I want to promote it and share it with other people. So, that's why I'm in all of the things that I'm, you know, blogging and, floss tubing and Instagramming. And I just love it. I just can't tell you how much I love cross stitch and the people that are involved in it and the whole community, because it is a community. So.
Yeah, and you do a terrific job with those videos. That's every one that I've watched, I really feel at the end like I could do that. A lot of times you see those videos and you get done, and you go, boy, I just don't know if I can handle it. But you do an excellent job of explaining and showing and taking your time to show each step thoroughly, and it really does work out well. And you obviously it's well lit, so I'm not looking in shadows trying to see what's going on. And I think you do a really good job of showing that. And like I said, I do want to learn how to finish, especially ornaments. And I've watched more than one of yours to try and get a sense of how to do it. And you do it. It's just really nice, really good job. And for someone who actually does finishing as a business, to share the techniques and secrets is really admirable.
Thank you.
Yeah, clearly you want to go beyond just making money. You want others to succeed, and that's great.
I feel very strongly that I was put on this earth for a reason. And I think part of the reason that I was put on this earth was to be a servant a servant to others and to share and to love one another and be a friend and a helpmate. And I, you know, finishing, there is no secrets to finishing. I mean, there's secrets, but anybody can do it. What I tell everybody is finishing, the number one component of finishing is time. You think about how much time it takes you just to stitch a small ornament. Think how much time it takes you to do that. And you can't expect to sit down and slob something together in 10 or 15 minutes and
it's true.
Great, you know, mm-hmm. it takes time. And that's what I'm trying to share with people is that you have to have the tools to do it, first of all. And then second of all, you have to take the time. To take the time to do it. It's an art. And you want to, you know, if you spend all that money on linen, you know, linen is expensive and the threads. And if you get the specialty threads, that's even more expense and buying the pattern. And then the time that it takes to stitch it, you want to give that credit. You want to make that piece shine and be beautiful. And so that's what I want to share with the world or with anybody that wants to know is that you can do that. And I can equip you to do that. And if you can't do it, well, then you can send it to me and I'll be happy to do it for you.
And that's true. And all of those things are true. And I think sometimes what happens with people is that the excitement of a piece comes at the beginning when you're mm-hmm. starting it and you're ambitious and it's new and the novelty is there. And so you get into it. And then by the time you're done actually stitching or in my case, quilting the top, the rest of it is a lot less exciting of a job. Mm-hmm. And you're bored of it at that time. You know, by mm-hmm. that time you've been looking at it for, months sometimes or longer. And the last thing you want to do is look. So you get it. You get to that part. That's the not exciting part, just at the point where you've really at the stretch of your interest of the piece. So the idea of being able to have someone else just finish off that piece, and for you, you're looking at it for the first time, so it's not going to be, you don't have quite the I can't stand looking at this anymore feeling at that point. So it is kind of nice, to do that. Mm-hmm. Or, of course, the alternate is to put it down, do another project, and then come back to it. But then how many of those projects do you end up with that are just, 98% of the way there and mm-hmm. aren't finished? So, mm-hmm. I think that's good.
Right. And I think that there's just some people that don't like the whole they like the process of stitching. They
don't
like the process of finishing.
True.
And I like finishing. You have to like it because it's not a fast process. I work, most days I work 7 to 8 hours every day. Even on the weekends, a lot of times I'm down finishing because my business has become so popular that I got to keep ahead. I'm trying to catch up. And, it takes a lot of time to do one piece. It really does. On my best days, I can maybe get 6 pieces done. And if they're large, intricately sewn, like quilted wall hangings or something like that, it takes me all day to do one piece. And, some people just don't want to do that. They just don't want to spend that kind of time on it. All they want to do is the stitching. And they want somebody else to do it. And I'm not the only finisher in the world. There's lots of finishers in the world. And everybody has a look and a different, strength, I believe, to their finishing. And so, it's good. That's a good option for people that don't like that process of finishing. So that's a good thing. It's just like a framer. I mean, a finisher is like a framer. It's just you're not going to get a frame. You're getting something else. So,
I remember when, I don't remember how long ago it was, but I remember when you decided to quit your full-time job and start doing this. And mm-hmm. I mean, that was a real change, at least in what I read on your blog, a real life-changing moment.
Yeah.
Was that quite a leap of faith there to say, I'm walking away from this and I'm going to do finishing full-time? Or were you at a point where that's what it had to do?
I was kind of at a point where that's what I had to do. I'm a microbiologist by trade. I went to school 5 years. I have a master's degree, and I worked in the healthcare field in a laboratory, a medical laboratory in a hospital, and I did that for 25 years, and I was good at it, but I never worked full-time at it because we had a large family, and it was important to us as a family for our kids not to be in daycare. And plus, it wasn't very cost effective. With the first three, they would have all been in daycare, you know, at the same time, and that wouldn't have been cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a blessing that I worked in the healthcare field because my husband's an electrical engineer, so there was no option. He had to work Monday through Friday, regular working hours, but I could work the off hours, in evenings and on weekends. And so that's what I did. All the way up to when Ellie was born 11 years ago, I worked every other weekend and on evening shift, which was they let me come in at 5 o'clock when my husband got home, and I worked until 11:30 or 12. And I did that on a part-time basis. It wasn't full-time, and it was okay, but I didn't get into a lot of sleep on the nights that I was
Yes, exactly.
And I never really had, you know, a lot of good things happen on the weekends, and I would miss out on that. And, of course, you know, being a healthcare worker, you don't have holidays off either. And this summer, I worked in an environment, you know, healthcare has just gotten kind of rough. They're cutting, you know, they're not getting reimbursements like they used to get. So they cut the workforce, and they're expecting people to do more and more and more work. And I worked as a PR. Well, I worked as a part-time person, and they cut me down to PRN. So I had no benefits, no vacation pay, no holiday pay, nothing. But yet I was still required to fill in when the full-time people were sick or on vacation, you know, at a moment's notice. And I kind of got tired of that. I got tired of kind of always getting my hands cut, you know, slapped, and not getting benefit that the other people got or a part-time person got, and so I quit. And so it was a leap of faith. I live in Bloomington, Indiana, and it's not a booming metropolis, and it seems like in the environment of healthcare right now, this could change at any time, but right now, it seems like, especially for laboratory work, they're going to centralized labs in large cities. And the largest city to us is Indianapolis, and it's about an hour away. And I don't want to have to drive an hour to and from work. That's 2 hours a day commute. I don't want to do that. And so we sat down as a family and decided that I think I could make a go of it with this finishing business and just really try to grow it, and I didn't have to try very hard, and you know, the Lord provides. That's all I have to say. And I've gotten a lot of business. I had a lot of business before, but I've really gotten a lot of business here recently, and it's all worked out. I've effectively kind of put myself in early retirement, which I regret because I had to work really hard to get myself through college, but in the best way that I can think of it for our family right now at this point in our lives, what I'm doing is what's best for us. So it's all worked out, and I'm happy with where I'm at in life and with the decision that I made. I just did that this summer. I my last day was July 31st. Sorry. July 31st was my last day working in the hospital, and I don't regret it. Not one bit. So.
Well, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, my wife and I work at home, and I have to say the commute is fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, you can both stop talking because
poor
Christine
more
than an hour.
Yeah, Christine's
more
got
than an hour.
You know, Long Island commute there. Yeah.
I have a Long Island commute, and emphasis on long.
Yeah. So okay, so you were already finishing, so to do it full time, it really was just a matter of devoting more time to it. You had all the gear you needed, mm-hmm. you had the space, the whole bit. So
yep.
you were able to just quit your job, and that time became
and just
finishing time.
That's right. And because I was doing it every day anyways, because I was just at the point when I quit, I was just working every other weekend. They had cut my hours down so much that I was just working 4 days a month. And when you think about that, you know, I had started out working basically a part-time job where I was working 3 or 4 days a week, and they cut me down to just 4 days a month. And then I'll be honest with you, one of the people that I worked with was very difficult, and I had more stress thinking about going to work than I needed to have, and for it wasn't worth it for the money that I was making.
Well, four days a month, you know, that's just 4 days a month is just hassle.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, I haven't, they had cut me down so far, and it was because I didn't want to work full time. And so it really didn't make the decision that difficult. And I have recouped, you know, what I lost by stop quitting that job. I've recouped everything in my business here at home, and it's worked out great. So
that's terrific when you can do that. That's just fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
You brought me back at the video I watched last night. You were finishing a little pillow ornament, and and I was watching you cut. And it brought me back to, I'm a magazine editor. Been doing it for 35 years. So I started back in the typewriter days and key lining with a camera ready copy that you had to cut with an X-Acto blade and a T-square and those kinds of things. And one of the first things I learned doing that, you know, one of the wizened veterans taught me, is always put your straight edge on the part that you want to keep.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
So the X-Acto knife doesn't wander into what you really want.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were cutting, I applauded you because you put your straight edge, you were cutting off XX fabric with your rotary cutter, and by golly, you put the straight edge right over the ornament stuff so that that wouldn't happen. So I was going, yes, it still applies.
Yes, that is true.
Yep. And then, now you have, looks like a really nice sewing machine. Is that a pretty basic unit or?
It is a Janome Magnolia. I think it's a 7660 or a 7330. I don't know. It's a Magnolia Janome series, and it is, it's electronic and computerized, but it's just the basic, very entry level of that. So it's about a $400 machine.
Okay.
It's 8 years old. I make sure that I maintain it. You can't blow air into it or anything like that. You can't oil it yourself. It has to be taken to the dealer, and they maintain it every year. And I make sure that I take it in for its annual maintenance. And it has never given me a moment's problem at all. I've sold a lot of them, as a matter of fact. It is a fabulous machine. I highly recommend it. It, like I said, it was about $400, but you know, to get a nice one, a Singer at Joann's,
it's not a bad price at all.
No, And this is it. It's just fabulous. It's a fabulous machine. It has everything on there that a general, you know, for what I need it for, just general sewing. It has everything on there that you could ever need, and it's fabulous. So. Highly recommend it.
Okay, she just sold four more. She wants her commission.
But it's true, right? Unless you're doing embroidery or doing like long arm quilting where you need something, you know, different, or you're doing something where you need a serger. There's, and maybe it's just, you know, the way that I learned from my grandmother who, you know, taught me on an old Singer, and then I had an old Singer for probably 20 years. There's very little you can't do with forward and backward, and
that's
the
right.
ability to adjust the length of the stitch.
Yep.
Beyond that, I think, you know, I have a computerized, you know, moderately computerized machine, and I don't think I've ever used any of those things except the first day where I said, ooh, I can sew a pattern of leaves. And then after I did that, I never did it again.
Yeah.
So,
zigzag,
you know,
zigzag straight and backwards.
There you go.
That's all you need.
Pretty much, right? That's it. And if it's easy to thread, that's really, you know, nice. And beyond that, that's really it. I think a lot of that is just, it becomes gimmicky, and maybe I'm just, you know, when I was young, actually, I worked for a time sewing, I don't even know how to explain it, but, medical devices. So, things that would, so it's crazy. So I worked for a company that made artificial legs. And so legs have to be held on to your body somehow. So there was a lot of straps and things like that. So I did, you know, medical corsets and things like that. So then I was working on a big industrial machine. And the only thing that had benefit over a home machine was because it was built into a table, your foot, instead of lifting it with your finger, you could lift it with your knee.
Oh.
So you were able to move faster because you were controlling that without having to lift your hand from your work.
I see.
Aside from that, and that was 30 years ago, forward, backward, and zigzag, I'm pretty much hooked on those. If you can do those things reliably and your thread doesn't get caught and you don't have tension issues, I don't see that, you know, I don't find any need to do anything more than that.
Yeah, I don't either. And I mean, I'm not a very, everything I've learned on a sewing machine, I've taught myself.
Right, right.
So I agree with you. I don't think it's just all bells and whistles and things that can go wrong. You know,
yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like a buttonholer is nice, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some of the different, you know, feet are nice if you're doing, you know, zippers and stuff like that. But aside from that, basic machines. And I think people get intimidated that, you know, a lot of the equipment is expensive, but you can buy things relatively inexpensively. And used machines are not always a terrible idea because there are lots of people that think, oh, I'm going to start sewing, or any kind of hobby, you know, and then they try it and they give up really easily and then they just want to get rid of it. So a lot of times you can get a machine, you know, really inexpensively. And that's great for kids, I think, because otherwise it can be very expensive to get involved, but a kid can use a used machine that's in good shape and get, you know, started and there you go. I mean, sometimes that's all it takes is just lowering the price of entry.
That's right.
Okay. One more thing. We got to end.
Okay.
You, the video I watched last night, you were stuffing the ornament and the lofting.
Yes.
The lofting technique. So talk about that because I was amazed in that little ornament, how much polyfiber fill you got into that thing.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, and I that is the number one thing that people will email me about. Like, what do you mean lofting? What is that? And I always say, take a cotton ball, and this is how you can visually do it. Just take a cotton ball from your bathroom and start pulling tiny parts of that cotton ball apart and lay it on your countertop, and then take that a new cotton ball and lay it beside it and see how much more volume that is between those two things. One, a cotton ball picked apart and a cotton ball that's put together. And it works the same way with fiber fill. I learned that about 5 years ago when I was finishing, and I realized, you know, my corners were, they wouldn't ever, I'm very particular about corners and making sure everything lines up. And I want to be perfect. You know, if somebody's paying me to finish, or if I'm doing my own finishing, I want it to be perfect. I want it to be beautiful. And I was never pleased with how my ornaments looked. And so I started buying this one particular brand of fiber fill, which is Mountain Mist. And it has it's not as slicky, I guess, is the slick or, that's the best word I can think, slick.
No, that's a good word. Right.
Yeah. As other brands, it's more cottony like. And so it has some substance to it. And when you pick that apart and then stuff it in there and you just stuff with your chopstick into the corner and just work it and work it and work it. Like I show in my video, it makes a tremendous difference, and you can see it you can see the evolution of finishing on my Christmas tree. And I know that sounds crazy.
No, I was going to ask. I was going to ask about that because I was afraid to ask you. Actually, you must have gotten a lot better over the years, and it's got to show.
Oh, it does. Absolutely. If you just go through my Flickr albums, you can see the evolution of my finishing. honestly, I'm being serious. I've learned a lot of wonderful things. I mean, you know, experience. Well, you know, teaches you everything in life, and you got to be open to it. And you have to admit that, man, maybe that wasn't so great when I did that 8 years ago. But you know, the two most important things that I've learned is keep your corners really packed tight, lofting your polyfill, and don't have so much negative space on your finishes. Keep it close to the design. And don't have like big wide open areas of fabric or complementary fabric. You want to keep them tight. If you keep your finishing tight to the design, it looks so much better. I mean, I need to do a video on that to show the difference between, you know, I see it all the time online on pictures where you have like people that do wall hangings or something like that, and they have all this, you know, this busy material around the stitch design, and your eye gets lost in the material around the stitching, and you kind of ignore the stitching. If you keep that tight to the stitching, that draws your eye right to the stitching. And so that's what my job as a finisher is you want your eye drawn immediately to the stitching, and your finishing should complement it and enhance what the stitching is. And I feel like, I'm not going to say I'm perfect at that every time, but I feel like I have a real eye, a real talent to appeal to a wide range of people. And that's the two things. Keep it tight to the design and loft that fiberfill. Till you, and then just stuff, just keep on stuffing into the ornaments or your pillows or whatever.
and you sure do stuff and work that stuff in.
I do. I go through fiberfill. The UPS man always like says to me, did you buy some more fiberfill? Because there is like a refrigerator sized box when it goes on sale on Joann's. I don't go to Joann's. Because I can get the larger bags from Joann's online. And so until I have like a 20% off coupon off your total purchase and it's already on sale, and I'll buy like 10 bags of this fiberfill, and it comes like in a refrigerator sized box. and my UPS man knows that that's what it is. He goes, did you buy more fiberfill? Because I have to get, I should take out stock in fiberfill because I probably go through, I would say, 40 pounds of fiberfill a year.
That's a lot of fiberfill.
That's a lot of fiberfill, that is.
All right, we got to wrap up. Now, you've given us an hour of great conversation, so tell people how they get a hold of you so that they can learn from you and or use you as a finisher.
Okay. On my blog, it is The Twisted Stitcher. If you just Google The Twisted Stitcher, I'm the number one hit. If you just Google my name, Vonna, I'm the number one hit on Google. I've been Googled that many times, I guess. But anyway, I'm the number one hit. I have a written blog that just displays my own stitching. I have a tutorial written blog that is called Learn to Finish with the Twisted Stitcher, and it's all pictures and written word on that blog. And I have a YouTube channel, which is just my name, Bonna Pfeiffer, and I have floss tube updates, which is my own personal stitching, and also video tutorials there. So, and I'm on Instagram too, at Bonna Pfeiffer on Instagram. So I am all over the place, and I welcome anybody to come and check me out and start stitching. That's what I'm here all about. I love stitching, and join me. I have fun talking it to anybody.
Okay, that did
Excellent.
It right there.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Vonna. Well, I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Gary, and it's nice to meet both of you. Christine, it was nice to meet you. And Gary, thank you so much for asking me.
You bet. Really enjoyed it. Thanks. All right.
Thank you.
That's it for Fiber Talk this week. We'll be back with another guest next week. Thanks.